Welcome to this Uvula audio presentation of L. Frank Baum's Policeman Blue Jay. This is a sequel to the book Twinkle Tales. You may remember our heroes Twinkle and Chubbins from the previous novel, as well as Birdland. Well, the setting for this new novel is Birdland, and Twinkle and Chubbins stumble in there, as they seem to stumble into most of their adventures. In 1906, the original Twinkle and Chubbins stories were a major hit for Baum. His publisher, Riley & Britton, sold 40,000 copies of the little books in a very short time. As is usual in the publishing industry, commercial success justifies a sequel. So Baum took his Policeman Blue Jay character from the Twinkle Tale, Bandit Jim Crow, and cast him in a separate novel that was issued in 1907. Policeman Blue Jay was another success for Baum and his publishers, and a second edition appeared in 1911 under the alternative title Babes in Birdland. By the time that the third edition of Policeman Blue Jay was published in 1917, the publisher and Baum decided that they would sell even more copies of the book if they dropped the Laura Bancroft pseudonym and acknowledged Baum's own authorship. Here we will present to you the original edition that includes the introduction that was supposedly written by author Laura Bancroft. The plot of the story is fairly straightforward, even for Baum. At the story's start, Twinkle and Chubbins are lost in a great forest. They encounter a tussox. This is a dreadful creature that looks like a spiny turtle, but is in reality a magician, sorcerer, wizard, and witch all rolled into one. The evil tussox casts a spell on the children, transforming them into little bird-like beings, with their own heads with the bodies of skylarks. Policeman Blue Jay, the force of order in the avian world of the forest, leads the two child larks on a flight through the sky. Blue Jay is their guide through the avian world and eventually helps them get back to the human world. And now, Policeman Blue Jay. The Dedication to the Children.
I must admit that the great success of the Twinkle Tales has astonished me as much as it has delighted the solemn-eyed, hard-working publishers. Therefore, I have been encouraged to write a new Twinkle book, hoping with all my heart that my little friends will find it worthy to occupy a place beside the others on their pet bookshelves. And because the children seem to especially love the story of Bandit Jim Crow, and bird life is sure to appeal alike to their hearts and their imaginations, I have written again about birds. The tale is fantastical and intended to amuse rather than instruct. Yet many of the traits of the feathered folk herein described are in strict accordance with natural history teachings, and will serve to acquaint my readers with the habits of birds in their woodland homes. At the same time, my birds do unexpected things because I have written a fairy tale and have not written a natural history. The question is often asked me, whether Twinkle and Chubbins were asleep or awake when they encountered these wonderful adventures. And it grieves me to reflect that the modern child has been deprived of fairy tales to such an extent that it does not know, as I did when I was a girl, that in a fairy story it does not matter whether one is awake or not. You must accept it as you would a fragrant breeze that cools your brow, a draught of sweet water, or a delicious flavor of a strawberry, and be grateful for the pleasure it brings you, without stopping to question too closely its source. For my part, I'm glad if my stories serve to while away a pleasant hour before bedtime, or keep one contented on a rainy day. In this way they are sure to be useful, and if a little tenderness with the helpless animals and birds is acquired with the amusement, the value of the tales will be doubled. L. Frank Baum, writing as Laura Bancroft. Chapter 1. Little Ones in Trouble.
"Seems to me, Chub,"
said Twinkle,
"that we're lost."
"Seems to me, Twink," said Chubbins, "that it isn't we that's lost, it's the path."
"It was here a minute ago,"
declared Twinkle.
"But it isn't here now," replied the boy.
"That's true,"
said the girl. It really was queer. They had followed the straight path into the great forest and had only stopped for a moment to sit down and rest, with a basket between them and their backs to a big tree. Twinkle winked just twice because she usually took a nap in the afternoon, and Chubbins merely closed his eyes a second to find out if he could see that long streak of sunshine through his pink eyelids. Yet during this second, which happened while Twinkle was winking, the path had run away and left them without any guide or any notion which way they ought to go. Another strange thing was that when they jumped up to look around them, the nearest trees began sliding away in a circle, leaving the little boy and little girl in a clear space. And the trees continued moving back and back, farther and farther, until all their trunks were jammed tight together, and not even a mouse could have crept between them. They made a solid ring around Twinkle and Chubbins, who stood looking at this transformation with wondering eyes.
"It's a trap," said Chubbins, "and we're in it."
"It looks that way,"
replied Twinkle thoughtfully.
"Isn't it lucky, Chub, we have this basket with us? If it wasn't for that, we might starve to death in our prison."
"Oh, well," replied the little fellow, "the basket won't last long. There's plenty of starve in the bottom of it, Twinkle. Any way you can fix it."
"Well, that's so, unless we can get out. Whatever do you suppose made the trees behave that way, Chubbins?"
"I don't know," said the boy. Just then a queer creature dropped from a tree into the ring and began moving slowly toward them. It was flat in shape like a big turtle, only it didn't have a turtle's hard shell. Instead, its body was covered with sharp prickers like rose thorns, and it had two small red eyes that looked cruel and wicked. The children could not see how many legs it had, but they must have been short, because the creature moved so slowly over the ground. When it had drawn near to them, it said, in a pleading tone that sounded soft and somewhat musical,
"Little girl, pick me up in your arms and pet me."
Twinkle shrank back.
"My, I couldn't think of doing such a thing,"
she answered. Then the creature said,
"Little boy, please pick me up in your arms and pet me."
"Go away," shouted Chubbins. "I wouldn't touch you for anything." The creature turned his red eyes first upon one and then upon the other.
"Listen, my dears,"
it continued.
"I was once a beautiful maiden, but a cruel tussock transformed me into this awful shape, and so I must remain until some child willingly takes me in its arms and pets me. And then, and not till then, will I be restored to my proper form."
"Don't believe it! Don't believe it!"
cried a high, clear voice, and both the boy and the girl looked quickly around to see who had spoken, but no one besides themselves was in sight, and they only noticed a thick branch of one of the trees slightly swaying its leaves.
"What's a tussock?"
asked Twinkle, who was beginning to feel sorry for the poor creature.
"It's a magician, a sorcerer, a wizard, and a witch all rolled into one,"
was the answer.
"And you can imagine what a dreadful thing that would be."
"Be careful, be careful,"
cried the clear voice again.
"That's the tussocks herself who's talking to you. Don't believe a word you hear."
At this, the red eyes of the creature flashed fire with anger, and it tried to turn its clumsy body around to find the speaker. Twinkle and Chubbins looked too, but only heard a flutter and a mocking laugh coming from the trees.
"If I ever get my eye on that bird, it will never speak again,"
exclaimed the creature in a voice of fury, very different from the sweet tones it had first used.
and perhaps it was this fact that induced the children to believe the warning was from a friend, and they would do well to heed it.
"Whether you are tussocks or not,"
said Twinkle,
"I will never touch you, you can be sure of that."
"Nor I," declared Chubbins stoutly, as he came closer to the girl and grasped her hand in his own. At this, the horrid thing bristled all its sharp prickers in anger and said,
"Then if I cannot conquer you one way, I'll do it another. Go, both of you, and join the bird that warned you, and live in the air and trees until you repent your stubbornness and promise to become my slaves. The Tussocks has spoken, and her magical powers are at work. Go."
In an instant, Twinkle saw Chubbins shoot through the air and disappear among the leaves of one of the tall trees. As he went, he seemed to grow very small and change in shape.
"Wait," she cried, "I'm coming too."
She was afraid of losing Chubbins, so she flew after him, feeling rather queer herself, and a moment after was safe in the tall tree, clinging with her toes to a branch and looking in amazement at the boy beside her. Chubbins had been transformed into a pretty little bird. All that is, except his head, which was Chubbins' own head, reduced in size to fit onto a bird body. It still had upon it the straw hat, which had also grown in size. And the sight that met Twinkle's eyes was so funny that she laughed merrily, and her laugh was like that of the sweet warbling of a skylark. Chubbins looked at her and saw almost what she saw. For Twinkle was a bird too, except for her head with its checked sunbonnet, which had grown small enough to fit the pretty, glossy feathered body of a lark. Both of them had to cling fast to the branch with their toes, for their arms and hands were now wings. Their toes were long and sharp pointed so that they could be used in place of fingers.
"My!"
exclaimed Twinkle.
"You're a queer sight, Chubbins."
"So are you," answered the boy. "That mean old thing must have witched us."
"Yes, I think we're enchanted,"
said Twinkle.
"And now, what are we going to do about it? We can't go home. Our folks would be scared nearly into fits. And we don't know the way home either."
"That's so," said Chubbins, fluttering his little wings to keep from falling, for he had nearly lost his balance.
"What are we going to do?"
she continued.
"Why, fly around and be gay and happy," said a clear and merry voice beside them. "That's what birds are expected to do."
Chapter 2. The Forest Guardian. Twinkle and Chubbins twisted their heads around on their little feathered necks and saw perched beside them a big bird of a most beautiful color. At first they were a bit frightened, for the newcomer seemed of giant size beside their little lark bodies, and he was, moreover, quite fierce in appearance, having a crest of feathers that came to a point above his head, and a strong beak and sharp talons. But Twinkle looked full into the shrewd, bright eyes, and found it good-humored and twinkling. So she plucked up her courage and asked,
"Were you speaking to us?"
"Very likely," replied the bluebird in a cheerful tone. "There's no one else around here to speak to."
"And was it you who warned us against that dreadful creature below in the forest?"
she continued.
"Yes, it was."
"Then,"
said Twinkle,
"we are very much obliged to you."
"Don't mention it. I'm the forest policeman. Policeman Blue Jay, you know. It's my duty to look after everyone who's in trouble here."
"We're in trouble, all right," said Chubbins sorrowfully.
"Well, it might have been way worse," remarked the policeman, making a chuckling sound in his throat that Twinkle thought was meant for a laugh. "If you'd ever touched the old tussocks, she would have transformed you into toads or lizards. It's an old trick of hers to get children into her power and then change them into things as loathsome as herself."
"I wouldn't have touched her anyhow,"
said Twinkle.
"Nor I,"
cried Chubbins in his shrill bird-like voice. "She wasn't nice."
"Still, it was good of you to warn us,"
Twinkle added sweetly. The blue jay looked upon the fluttering little things with kind approval, and then he laughed outright.
"Ha, ha, ha! What's happened to your heads?"
Nothing, except they're smaller now, replied Chubbins.
But birds shouldn't have human heads, retorted the blue jay. I suppose that old Tussex did that so the birds wouldn't admit you into their society, for you're not a bird or a human. But never mind, I'll explain your case, and you may be sure all the birds of the forest will be kind to you.
Must we stay like this always?
Asked Twinkle anxiously.
I can't really say, answered the policeman. There's said to be a way to break every enchantment, if one knows what it is. The trouble in these cases is to discover what the charm may be that'll restore you to your natural shapes. But just now, you got to make up your minds to live in a forest for a time, and to be happy as you can under the circumstances.
Well, we'll try, said Chubbins with a sigh.
That's right, exclaimed Policeman Blue Jay, nodding his crest in approval. The first thing you have is a house. So if you fly with me, I'll try to find you one.
I'm afraid,
said Twinkle nervously.
The larks are almost the strongest and best flyers we have here, declared the Blue Jay. You two children have become skylarks now, and may soar so high in the air you can scarcely see the earth below you. For that reason, you need to have no fear. Be bold and brave, and all will be well.
He spoke in such a kindly and confident voice that both Twinkle and Chubbins gained courage, and when the policeman added,
"Come on,"
and flew straight as an arrow into the sky above the treetops, the two little skylarks, with their girl and boy heads, followed swiftly after him, and had no trouble in going just as fast as their conductor.
It was quite a pleasant and interesting experience, to dart through the air and be in no danger of falling. When they rested on their outstretched wings, they floated as lightly as bubbles. And soon a joyous thrill took possession of them, and they began to understand why it is that the free wild birds are always so happy in their native state. The forest was everywhere under them, for it was of vast extent, and presently the blue jay swooped downward and alighted near the top of a tall maple tree that had many thick branches. In a second, Twinkle and Chubbins were beside him, their little hearts beating fast in their glossy bosoms from the excitement of their rapid flight. Just in front of them, firmly fastened to a crotch of a limb, was a neatly built nest of a gray color, lined with some soft substance that was as smooth as satin.
"Here is the nest that Nitty Thrush and Daisy Thrush built for themselves a year ago," said their new friend. "They've now gone to live in a wood across the big river, so you're welcome to their old home. It's almost as good as new, and there's no rent to pay."
"It's awfully small," said Chubbins.
Twittered Policeman Blue Jay.
"Remember, you are not children now, but skylarks, and this is a thrush's nest. Try it. You're sure to find it'll fit you exactly."
So Twinkle and Chubbins flew into the house and nestled their bodies against his soft lining and found that their friend was right. When they were cuddled together with their slender legs tucked into the feathers of their breasts, they just filled the nest to the brim, and no more room was necessary.
"And now I'll mark the nest for you so everyone will know you claimed it," said the policeman.
And with his bill he pecked a row of small dots in the bark of the limb just beside the nest.
"I hope you'll be very happy here, and this afternoon I'll bring some friends to meet you. So now goodbye until I see you again."
"Wait," cried Chubbins. "What are we going to eat?"
"Eat?" answered the Blue Jays of surprise. "Why, you may feast upon all the good things the forest offers. Grubs and beetles and worms and butterfly eggs."
"Ew," gasped Chubbins. "It makes me sick just to think of it."
"You see, Mr. Blue Jay," said Twinkle, "we're not all bird like you are, and that makes a big difference. We don't have any bills to pick up the things that birds like to eat, and we do not care for the same sort of food either."
"Well, what do you care for?" asked the policeman in a puzzled voice.
"Why, cake and sandwiches and pickles and cheese, like we had in our basket. We couldn't eat any living things, you see, because
We're not used to it.
The blue jay became thoughtful.
I understand your objection, and perhaps you're right. Not having good bird sense because the brains in your heads are still human. Let me see. What can I do to help you?
The children did not speak, but watched him anxiously.
Well, where did you leave your basket? He finally asked.
In the place where the old witch enchanted us?
Well, then I have to try to get it for you.
But it's too big and heavy for a bird to carry,
suggested Twinkle.
Sure enough, of course. That's a fact.
He turned his crested head upward, trying to think of a way, and saw a black speck moving across the sky.
Wait here just a minute, and I'll be back.
And he darted upward like a flash. The children watched him mount into the sky toward the black speck, and heard his voice crying out in sharp, quick notes. And before long, Policeman Blue Jay attracted the other bird's attention, causing it to pause in its flight and sink slowly downward until the two drew close together. Then it was seen that the other bird was a great eagle, strong and sharp-eyed, with broad wings that spread at least 6 feet from tip to tip.
Good day, friend eagle, said the blue jay. I hope you're in no hurry, for I want to ask you to do me a great favor.
What is it?
Asked the eagle in a big, deep voice.
Please go to a part of the forest with me and help carry a basket to some friends of mine. I'll show you the way. It's too heavy for me to lift, but with your great strength, you could do it easily.
It will give me great pleasure to so favor you,
replied the eagle politely. So Policeman Blue Jay led the way, and the eagle followed with such mighty strokes of its wings that the air was sent swirling in little eddies behind him, as the water is churned by a steamer's paddles. It was not very long before they reached the clearing in the forest. The horrid tussocks had wriggled her evil body away to soothe her disappointment by some other wicked act, but the basket stood as the children had left it. The eagle seized the handle in his stout beak and found it was no trouble at all for him to fly into the air and carry the basket with him.
This way, please, this way, chirped the blue jay,
and the eagle bore the precious burden safely to the maple tree and hung it upon a limb just above the nest. As he approached, he made such a fierce fluttering that Twinkle and Chubbins were dreadfully scared and flew out of their nest, hopping from limb to limb until they were well out of the monstrous bird's way. But when they saw the basket and realized the eagle's kindly act, they flew toward him and thanked him very earnestly for the assistance.
Well, goodness me,
exclaimed the eagle, turning his head first one way and then the other, that both his bright eyes might observe the child larks.
What curious creatures have you here, my good policeman?
It's another trick of old Howtow, the Tuxus. She found two children in the forest and enchanted them. She wanted to make them toads, but they wouldn't touch her, so she couldn't. Then she got herself into a fine rage and made the little dears half birds and half children, as you see them now. I was in a tree nearby and saw the whole thing, because I was sorry for the innocent victims. I befriended them, and as this basket belongs to them, I've asked you to fetch it to their nest.
I am glad to be of service,
replied the eagle.
If ever you need me and I am anywhere around,
he continued, addressing the larks,
just call to me, and I will come at once.
Thank you,
said Twinkle gratefully. We are much obliged, added Chubbins. Then the eagle flew away, and when he was gone, Policeman Blue Jay also bid them goodbye.
I'll be back this afternoon without fail. Just now I gotta go and look over the forest and make sure none of the birds have been up to mischief during my absence. Don't go very far from your nest, at least for a time, or you may get lost. The forest is a big place, but when you're more used to it and to your new condition, you could be more bold in venturing abroad.
We won't leave this tree,
promised Twinkle in an earnest voice, and Chubbins chimed in with,
That's right. We won't leave this tree until you come back.
Goodbye, said the policeman.
Goodbye,
responded Twinkle and Chubbins. So So the blue jay darted away and was soon lost to sight, and Twinkle and Chubbins were left alone to seriously consider the great misfortune that had overtaken them. Chapter 3. The Child Larks. "Folks will be worried about us, Twink," said Chubbins.
"Course they will. They'll wonder what became of us and try to find us,"
Twinkle replied. "But they won't look in the treetops."
"No."
"Nor think to ask the birds where we are."
"Why should they? They can't talk to the birds, Chub,"
Twinkle reminded him. "Why not? We talk to them, don't we? And they talk to us. At least the policeman and the eagle did."
"That's true,"
answered Twinkle.
"And I don't understand it a bit. I have to ask Mr. Blue Jay to explain to us."
"What's the use of a policeman in the forest?" asked Chubbins after a moment's thought.
"Well, I suppose that he has to keep the birds from being naughty. Some birds are just awful mischievous. Chub, there's the magpies, you know, that steal, and the crows that fight, and the jackdaws are saucy, and lots of others that just get into trouble. Seems to me Policeman Blue Jay is a pretty busy bird if he looks after things as he ought."
"Probably he's got his hands full," said Chubbins.
"Well, not that, for he hasn't any hands any more than we have. Perhaps you ought to say he's got his wings full,"
suggested Twinkle. "That reminds me, I'm hungry," chirped the boy lark.
"Well, we got the basket."
"But can we eat cake and things, witched up as we are?"
"Well, don't we have mouth and teeth just the same as ever?"
"Well, yeah, but we haven't any hands, and there's a cloth tied over the top of the basket."
"Dear me,"
exclaimed Twinkle.
"I hadn't even thought of that."
They flew together to the basket and perched upon the edge of it. It seemed astonishingly big to them, now that they were so small. But Chubbins remarked that this fact was a pleasant one, for instead of eating all the good things the basket contained at one meal, as they had at first intended, it would furnish them with food for many days to come. But how to get into the basket was the thing to be considered just now. They fluttered around on every side of it and finally found a small place where the cloth was loose. In a minute, Chubbins began clawing at it with his little feet, and Twinkle helped him, so that gradually they managed to pull the cloth away, far enough for one of them to crawl through the opening. Then the other followed, and because the big basket was not quite full, there was exactly room for them to stand underneath the cloth and walk around on top of a row of cookies that lay next to a row of sandwiches. The cookies seemed enormous. One was lying flat, and Chubbins declared it seemed as big around as a dining room table at home.
"All the better for us,"
said Twinkle, bending her head down to nibble at the edge of the cookie. "If we're going to be birds," said Chubbins, who was also busily eating as best he could, "we ought to be regular birds and have bills to peck with. This being half one thing and half another doesn't suit me at all."
"Well, the witch wasn't trying to suit us. She was trying to get us into trouble,"
replied Twinkle. "Well, she did that all right," he said. It was not so hard to eat as they had feared, for their slender necks enabled them to bend their heads low. Chubbins' hat fell off a minute later, and he wondered how he was going to get it back on his head again.
"Can't you stand on one foot and use the other foot like a hand?"
asked Twinkle. "I don't know," he said.
"Well, storks stand on one leg. I've seen them in pictures."
So Chubbins tried it, and found he could balance his little body on one leg very nicely. If he toppled either way, he had but to spread his wings and tail feathers and keep himself from falling. He picked up his hat with the claws of his other foot and managed to put it on by ducking his head. This gave the boy lark a new idea. He broke off a piece of the cookie and held it in his claw while he ate it. Seeing his success, Twinkle followed his example, and after a few attempts, found she could eat very comfortably in that way. Having had their luncheon, and it amazed Chubbins to see how very little was required to satisfy their hunger, the bird children crept out of the basket and flew down to the twig beside their nest.
"Hello,"
cried a strange voice.
"Newcomers, eh?"
They were so startled that they fluttered a moment to keep from tumbling off the limb. Then Twinkle saw a furry red head sticking out of a small hollow in the trunk of the tree. The head had two round black eyes, an inquisitive nose, a wide mouth with sharp teeth, and whiskers like those of a cat, it seemed as big as the moon to the shy little child larks, until it occurred to the girl that the strange creature must be a squirrel.
You scared us,
she said timidly.
You scared me at first,
returned the squirrel in a comic tone.
Dear me, how came you birds to have children's heads?
That isn't the way to put it, remarked Chubbins, staring back into the eyes of the squirrel. You should ask how we children happen to have birds' bodies.
Very well. Put the conundrum that way if you like,
said the squirrel.
What's the answer?
We're enchanted,
replied Twinkle.
Ah, the tussocks.
Yeah, we were caught in the forest. She bewitched us.
That's too bad. She's a very wicked old creature, for a fact, and loves to get folks into trouble. Are you going to live here?
Said their new acquaintance.
Yes, Policeman Bluejay gave us this nest.
Then it's all right, for Policeman Bluejay rules the feathered tribes of this forest about him as he likes. Have you seen him in full uniform yet?
No, they replied.
Less his feathers are his uniform.
Well, he's too proud of his office to be satisfied with feathers, I can tell you. When some folks get a little authority, they want all the world to know about it, and a bold uniform covers many a faint heart. But as I'm your nearest neighbor, I'll introduce myself. My name's Whisk.
My name is Twinkle.
And mine's Chubbins.
Pleased to make your acquaintance,
said the squirrel, nodding.
I live in the second flat.
How's that? Asked the boy.
Why, the second hollow. You know, there's a possum living in the hollow down below who's carrying four babies around in her pocket. And then there's Mrs. Hootaway, the gray owl. She lives in the hollow above, the one you can see far over your heads. So I'm the second flat tenant.
I see, said Twinkle.
Early in the morning, the possum comes growling home to go to bed. Late at night, the owl hoots and keeps folks awake. But I'm very quiet and well-behaved. You'll find me a good neighbor,
continued Whisk. I'm sure of that, said Chubbins. As if to prove his friendship, the squirrel now darted out of the hollow and sat upon a limb beside the children, holding his bushy tail straight up so that it stood above his head like a big plume in a soldier's helmet.
Are you hungry?
Asked the girl.
Not very. I can't get much food until the nuts are ripe. You know that. And my last winter's supply was gone a long time ago. But I managed to find some bits to eat here and there.
Do you like cookies?
She asked.
I don't know,
answered Whisk.
Where do they grow?
In baskets. I'll get you a piece and you can try it.
So Twinkle flew up and crept into her basket again, quickly returning with a bit of cookie in her claw. It was not much more than a crumb, but nonetheless, it was all she could carry. The squirrel seized the morsel in his paws, examined it gravely, and then took a nibble, and an instant later it was gone.
That was very good indeed. Where do these baskets of cookies grow?
Well, they don't grow anywhere, replied Twinkle with a laugh. The baskets come from the grocery store, and my mama makes the cookies.
Oh, they're human food then.
Yeah, would you like some more?
Not just now. I don't want to rob you, and it's foolish to eat more than one needs,
said Whisk.
Just because the food tastes good. But if I get hungry, perhaps I'll ask you for another bite.
Do. You are welcome to what we have, said the girl, as long as it lasts.
Well, that's very kind of you,
returned the squirrel. They sat and talked for an hour, and Whisk told them stories of the forest and of the many queer animals and birds that lived there. It was all very interesting to the children, and they listened eagerly until they heard a rushing sound in the air that sent Whisk scurrying back into his home.